My name is Giorgio Settis. I'm the co-founder of Nutrafol.
My hair started thinning in my early 20s. I tried everything and nothing was really working. So we created Nutrafol. Our hair growth supplements undergo clinical trials and have helped millions of men and women get visibly thicker and stronger hair in just 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Vincent Joe.
Hi, I'm Kathy Reed.
And I'm Allison Reed.
Hi, I'm Ashley.
Hi, I'm Grace.
We're from the Haydenettes.
I am Mark Henretti.
Ciao a tutti, siamo Rebecca Ghirardi.
E Filippo Ambrosini.
E vi diamo il benvenuto a
This Week in Skating.
Welcome to This Week in Skating, the weekly podcast bringing you the latest news from the world of figure skating. Here are your hosts, Daphne, Gina, and Matteo.
I am so excited for this interview as two of my favorite things are coming together, figure skating and Broadway. Alex Benoit was a two-time U.S. junior bronze medalist with his ice dance partner, Eliana Porubinsky. They competed at two World Junior Championships where they finished in fourth place in 2016.
Then, on the senior level, Eliana and Alex were the 2017 U.S. pewter medalists and finished their season in the top 24 of the ISU World Rankings for ice dance. They competed one more season after that, but then Alex left the world of figure skating to finish his college education and to pursue his acting career.
Alex has performed in shows in Illinois. In 2020, he received his master's degree in classical acting for professional theater from the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts. In September 2022, he was cast in The Notebook at Chicago Shakespeare Theater. The show then moved to Broadway in 2024, and Alex made his Broadway stage debut in May. So we want to welcome Alex to This Week in Skating.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
And we want to also mention that we have Anne here as well. So Anne's going to ask Alex some questions too. We've got a big group here. We're so excited to have you, Alex, to talk all things Broadway and skating. We got to throw in the skating too.
Yeah, we're excited. We mentioned before we started recording that we've wanted to do this episode for a while, but things get crazy with the season and we're not always able to do things when we would like to. So we're so appreciative of you joining us to talk about this and all the fun and excitement that you have had in your Broadway run.
Absolutely. I'm so glad to be here with you all. I've had so many fond memories with icedance.com throughout my entire skating career. So it's a nice round circle moment.
I should frame this. We are recording with Alex as The Notebook is getting ready to close. So we're 2 days before the closing of the show. And I told him before we started recording that I was going to be in New York City for Christmas and I'm not going to be able to see the show. So I'm really bummed. But let me just start with, what are your feelings about the show closing? And then we can go into talking a little bit about the show. But since the show is kind of coming to an end right now, let's start with that since that's kind of the newest part.
Yeah, we spoke a little bit before we started recording, but for the viewers, it's been a really beautiful year. I joined this project back in 2021 was when I first auditioned. And that was like we were saying, back out in Chicago where I grew up. And at that point, I knew it was a pre-Broadway run, but you never know what's going to happen. And so stepping onto the project at that point, you kind of come in, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tail, you know, you don't know exactly where it's going to go, but you're just ready and excited to experience it. And getting into the room in Chicago on Navy Pier at Chicago Shakespeare on that first day with our incredible team with, you know, Michael Greif and Shelley Williams, two storied directors and actors in Broadway history, and Ingrid Michaelson, our composer, lyricist, and Becca Brunstetter, our book writer. You know, people, I tell this story, you know, whenever I can, but I have a playlist on YouTube from when I was in like fifth grade, and the first song on it is Ingrid Michaelson. And so it was this crazy moment where I'm like, oh my word, I'm talking to Ingrid now. You know, I'm singing her music that she wrote and she's listening to me sing it. And, you know, there's this you know, beating of your heart as you get over this initial fear into this beautiful connection that we get to share this art with each other. And the thing that really took my heart as a fifth grader, listening to her music all the way through high school and et cetera, I now get to share live with her and, you know, share in this gift that she's given and share, you know, hopefully what I can bring to it too. But yeah, getting to be in that room was electric. The first time that you hear the music and the words of the show, and it's just such a beautiful, beautiful piece where it's human. You know, we get to come together and talk about what it means to get older and what it means to love so truly and so deeply that nothing can come between two people. And whether it's time or that age and what comes with that or people, there is nothing that can keep love apart. It is ultimate and it conquers all. And so to get to experience that the first time in Chicago and come in and have no idea what it's going to be and be so blown away and in love with the piece personally, and then to have the privilege to, you know, get to ride that roller coaster, you know, to follow the show from Chicago to New York, and then to get back in the room and have directors who are, you know, we had a great run in Chicago and it was incredibly well liked and the reviews were lovely and you know, they very well could have said, you know what, it worked, let's just put it back out the way it was. And our directors chose to be daring and say, let's continue to examine this because there is more life to be lived. You know, a year or so passed between Chicago and New York. And so we all lived lives. And what do we do as actors? We get to reflect our own experience into these people that we play. And so to have directors who are daring enough to say, you have lived lives, let's see what you have lived since then, and let's reflect that through these characters, was really exhilarating. And then to get to follow that journey, you know, after the show opens and after the directors are out of the picture, and when it's just us actors, they're getting to explore further and further and deeper every day, because with live theater, it's, you know, it might be our 200th show, but for a lot of people in the audience, it's their first show. You know, it's their first time living Noah and Allie's journey. And that's the exciting thing, is that we get to share this story brand new every night. And so there's constant reexamination. But yeah, it's bittersweet coming to this close, going back to the initial question. But I think it kind of goes without saying after explaining that I just feel so fortunate, very, very lucky to have gotten to experience this whole journey and to get to see this piece that was so beautiful in the beginning just fully blossom into something that is so much greater than I could have ever expected. And to be a part of an original cast album that will be listened to for years to come, and, you know, to always have a piece of this show in my heart is just really lovely. And I think that's what I'm taking with me moving into this weekend. And also, for those of you who can't make it out before this Sunday, the show will be going on tour. And so there will be a tour starting in September of 2025 in Cleveland, and then a bunch more locations that have yet to be announced. And I don't know what my role in that will be, if I'll be a part of that production. You know, it depends on if I'm doing things at the time. There are so many pieces that go into it, but I will say that I know for a fact that it will be a beautiful show, and that if you have the opportunity to see it, you should go out and enjoy it, because I think that you would be very hard pressed to not leave that show feeling changed and like you have a whole new appreciation for the people that you love in your life and what it means to have the time that we're given with them.
Now, were you familiar with The Notebook before you were in the show?
It's a funny thing, because I feel like The Notebook as a source material can be very polarizing. You know, you have some people who have never heard of it at all. You have people who read the book and hate the movie. You have people who love the movie and hate the book. You have people who love it all and everything in between. It's certainly very polarizing in that way. I had personally seen the movie I think I first saw the movie when I was like 13, 14. It had been something where I was like surfing the channels and I saw it and I was like, oh, I think I recognize that guy or that girl, you know, and I ended up watching it. And it's one of those things that, yeah, of course there are, you know, there are things that people can look at and pick apart, but I feel like it's kind of a quintessential love story of, you know, whether it's time or people, things pulling a pair apart and their love being so great that it conquers it. And it always, it's magnetism, you know, whether it's 10 years, 10 months, 10 weeks, 10 days, 10 seconds, if people are meant to be together, the universe will pull them back together. And so I remember seeing that movie and it was, as a 14-year-old, I was like, ooh, I'm the edgy romantic guy because I like The Notebook. but it is kind of, you know, the early 2000s Romeo and Juliet, you know, in a story where these two are, obviously it ends in a happier, well, debatably a happier way. But it's these people that have to be together and they find a way. But I hadn't read the book. To answer the initial question, okay. I had not yet read the book. When I was booked into this show, when I was cast in the show, then I read the book. I went and I immediately bought a copy of the book. I read through it and got very excited, actually. The book and the movie are so different.
Okay.
They're very different. They take, obviously, the same guiding points of the story, but they're... their sense of storytelling, I think, is very different. The way that they focus, I'm going to say the camera lens, but obviously in a book, it's the page and on camera, it's camera. But from the perspective of the viewer listener is very different, I feel. And actually our musical, our play is based closer to the book than the movie. So I think a lot of people come into it expecting it to be a carbon copy of what they see on camera. And it actually, I feel, has taken some of the best pieces of exploration from the film. And then a lot of the detail and interest that was in the initial book and then has expanded upon it. You know, they've kind of created this. We didn't want to be a copy. We wanted to create our own new version. And our book writer, that the person who wrote the script, Becca Brunstetter, she's worked on countless wonderful TV shows and films. Like This Is Us, she was a big writer on This Is Us. And if you know anything about This Is Us, you know that she knows how to make you cry. And so this one is certainly no difference from that. There's a cacophony of sniffles and tears, specifically at certain points in the show, but I think it's really beautiful. It's crying and emotion are such a key component of the human experience. And I think it's really special that we can get 1,000 people in one space and all of us on stage can share a moment because, you know, everyone comes, how do you not cry when you're doing this show? It's like, no, we do. We're up there feeling the same things as everyone in the audience. That's the beautiful thing about live theater is that we're sharing. It's a connection between the two. They can't live separate from each other. It's that relationship that makes it live theater. And, you know, going back again, Becca did such a beautiful job creating a piece that allows us to, without fear or, you know, protection of ourselves, feel these things together. And I'm very thankful for her.
Now, I was going to ask if it was more like the book and the movie because they're different.
Yeah.
And you said it was the book. So, but talk a little bit about the role you have in the show. And I know Anne has some questions about that too. So yeah, talk about who you are in the show.
I'm in kind of an interesting position. A lot of people, you know, you come to a show and you don't necessarily understand all the goings on that happen backstage and what all is happening because there's a lot going on, you know, and there are so many moving pieces behind the curtain, that as an audience member, you don't necessarily get to see. And so I'm kind of one of those moving pieces, but I'm in between both camps. You have the cast, the company that's performing on stage, and then you have the creative side, and that's the directors, the choreographers, music writers, book writers, music directors, all these people. And so I am a little bit in both bases with that, because in this project, I am the cover for four of the characters on stage. I cover Finn, Johnny, father, son, middle Noah, and Lon. I know that's more than four people, but it's played by four people, four actors. And then on top of that, I'm also the dance captain. Now, a dance captain's job in a musical is basically once the choreographers and the directors and all those folks leave, they, in essence, kind of pick up some of the responsibility. So it's my job to note the show at least once a week, where I'm basically watching it, whether it's backstage or in the house, or we have monitors, little TV screens in all of the dressing rooms, where I can watch it and basically make sure that it's staying true to the initial set show. You know, that's an effort to make sure that every audience, whether they're seeing the 10th show or the 100th show, or in some cases, 2000th, you know, there have been shows that have gone for thousands and thousands of performances. Book of Mormon just hit their 5,000th show. And their job is to make sure that every person who comes to see that show is getting the same show. Now it's live and there's room for living in that, but certain things are set. Choreographically, we want to make sure that if there's dance, that they're hitting the same, you know, point of your toe or, you know, leg flare or timing, et cetera, or hitting the same spot on stage so that you make sure that you're in specific cones of light, right? Because there are, in our show, I think we have, you know, it's over 100 different individual lights that shine specific beams on stage. And if you have to be in one of those beams, I mean, sometimes it's literally down to, you know, a 6-inch wiggle room that you have to hit every single time in the dark, because you're going out there before the light's on and you got to hit it just right. And when you're on stage, it can sometimes be tough to tell, because if the light's coming directly down and you're looking out, you can't look at your feet and see if you're in the shadow. And so it's my job to make sure that everyone is keeping true to their show, that it maintains internal motivation, you know, because dance is acting in its essence. You know, why do we dance? Because the emotion is so great that we can't help but move. You know, it's the same thing with skating. And so I do that. And then in addition to that, a lot of times, like last night, for instance, I was on for Lon, because if one of the people has to be out for a show, whether they're sick or they have another thing that they're doing, it's my job to be on call every night. And so I'm at the theater at the same time as everyone else. And sometimes you get, like last night, someone got 5 minutes notice and they were on for the leading role for older Noah, played by Dorian Harewood, who was nominated for a Tony. And he had to just step in and be ready and act opposite Marianne Plunkett, who is the greatest actor of our generation, in my opinion, has won Tonys, nominated for Tonys. And you just have to do it. You have to be ready all the time for any of these characters. And sometimes those characters are on the stage at the same time, and you have to know the opposite choreography because they're dancing together. And so it's kind of like being able to, you know, in ice dance terms, let's say you watch, you know, Madison Chalk and Evan Bates, right? And you see Maddie and Evan, and they're out there, you know, doing a rumba, right? And you have to be ready to go out and do a rumba perfectly, doing every key point at the perfect time with perfect placement at any notice. You never know what's going to happen. It's like you step on the ice, and as they're announcing your names, they say, and Maddie will be doing this part, and Evan will be doing this part. And so it's always, it's a surprise, and it's a certain amount of, I think, anxiety management that comes with it. But it's also incredibly exciting. You know, I got to go on stage and perform middle Noah, you know, a bunch of times in the last year. And, you know, middle Noah is another one of the leading roles. We kind of have six big leading roles because Noah and Allie experience life together, and you have a younger, a middle, and an older. And so to get to, you know, go out there and do middle Noah with Joy Woods, who is, you know, the greatest actor of this coming generation, in my opinion. You know, she's on the verge of, I think, one of the most tremendous careers of the 2000s, you know, this 100-year era. And getting to go out there and perform with Joy and, you know, share this beautiful piece and live in the moment with her was really, really, really special. And that little bit of anxiety management was all worth it when you get to go out there and share this beautiful show with this wonderful company, because, you know, I'm talking about Marianne and Dorian and Joy, but every piece of this puzzle is brilliant. Jordan Tyson, John Cardoza, Andrea Burns, Charles Wallace, you know, Yasmin Ehlers, Dorcas Lung, Hilary Fisher. I mean, every single piece of this puzzle, I wouldn't change for the world. They're all absolutely incredible. Carson Stewart, Chase Del Rey, you know, they're all, I feel so privileged to be a part of this company because they really are special actors.
Yeah, you're actually talking about the actors around you, but there's also, I think, another element that I'd like to kind of question you about, because you're in Broadway now, the actor's dream place. So it's like the West End of London, and then you have Broadway. But I feel like Broadway is almost a step higher than the West End in London in terms of popularity around the world. When you actually got casted and you knew you would go to Broadway, did you feel that was also, you know, adding some pressure on you, or maybe stressing you out, or were you excited?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like the only thing I can really compare it to is like the first time that you skate in a Grand Prix, or the first time that like I went to Junior Worlds, or, you know, something like that, where it's like a whole new ball game. And now there are, and it's not just those levels. I mean, it's the first time that I felt the same thing the first time I went to regionals, you know, or the first time I went to Midwesterns or nationals, you know, everyone, it's all important. It's all special. And it's the first time, you know, and obviously there's, you know, a history and a sort of rite of passage with being on Broadway. And, you know, this is a separate discussion, but also such a cool moment for me to be like, wow, I get to be a part of this special storied thing that I've looked up to and researched and idolized for years and years and years. But yeah, there is a certain sense of like, oh no, now if I, you know, if I eat it on this stage, it's not just like my hometown seeing it. You know, there are people in here who are coming from, you know, from London or from, you know, China or all over the world come in to see Broadway shows. And not only that, but the harshest critic, which is the New York theater audience. And so, you know, with the way that social media is, you know, there are always people, you know, recording or stuff, you know, don't record. Please don't record, but you know, it happens. And so it's like, yeah, you, when you get on stage, you have to be on, you gotta be ready. And there's a responsibility. It hasn't been too stressful for me, if I'm fully honest, coming from the skating world, you know, I've dealt with nerves about that kind of stuff before. And frankly, at this point, it's like, you know, if I'm in the moment, and like, there's a lot of emotional stuff in this. And for instance, the first time I ever went on for Middle Noah, it's been referred to as one of the harder, you know, male sings right now with a lot of the stuff. There's a lot of really high stuff that's sung in it. And, you know, I get to one point where I'm in tears on stage, you know, wanting Allie to come back and be with me and choose me instead of choosing what the world wants her to do, choose what she wants. And what I hope that is me. And the first time I went on, I was just so emotional and so taken with what was happening and locked in with Joy. And I got to a certain part where I'm singing kind of high and light, and my voice fluttered a little. You know, it had the flutter that you get when you're crying. And it was so funny because I had the realization that when I was younger and I saw myself as a performer versus an artist versus someone living, I would have been frustrated with myself because I would have said it wasn't perfect and my job is to be perfect. But that isn't our job. Our job is to share something with an audience that makes them feel things, right? It's like a painter. A painter's job is not to do a perfect brush stroke. A painter's job is to create something that allows audiences of all types to feel something. And that doesn't have to be the same thing that they feel, to feel something for them. And in the moment, if I was honest with myself, I was feeling so deeply that it came out in a way that was physical, in the same way that when you feel so deeply, you can't help but dance, right? Like we were talking about. It's the same thing with that. And so I had a really cool moment actually where I was like, I feel that I as an artist have grown in this moment because I am now okay allowing myself to be human on stage and to feel these things that might have physical effect in my voice. But that physical effect is true to Noah in that moment because Alex didn't have a voice flutter. Noah did, right? And so, yeah, that's kind of how I've been handling this new heightened sense of responsibility with Broadway. And certainly, you know, as a person who's on call, there's also a heightened sense with that because it's like, wow, now the pressure is really on. But yeah, as long as we are present and listening and interacting with our scene mates, whether it's a person or the audience, you know, because there are some times in musical theater where, or in plays and in all theater where your scene mate is the audience. It's the world. It's, you know, it's the universe that you're speaking to. And, you know, as long as you're present in that, it's all good. It's all human. It's all the people.
Alex, I was going to ask you what you have just masterly answered. So there was no room for the question. But as we were speaking and I was listening to all of the experiences that you have you ever considered taking what you have and marrying it with Ice Dance by doing choreography?
You know, I've thought about that a little bit. For a little while, right after I had retired from competitive skating and I was living in Chicago and I started working in the Chicago theater scene, I played around a little bit with my own choreography on my own body, you know, created a couple of pieces. And I worked with a couple skaters as well where I was helping them, you know, whether I was a sole choreographer or helping them with their choreography, find those moments of character. Because for me, I mean, that was what always jazzed me about Ice Dance specifically is, you know, it's every discipline of skating is so beautiful and lovely. But for me, Ice Dance felt like the one where I really felt I could delve deeper into the character and building this story that allowed free and emotive movement. Right. And so, yeah, I have thought about that because, like I said, if that was my favorite part, that now gives me the opportunity to get to focus in on that with other skaters, whether they are in pairs. I've worked with a pairs team. I've worked with single skaters. And I've worked with ice dancers in terms of finding this emotive grounding to build the character upon. And it's something that, you know, when I was skating, I think I enjoyed, but now looking back at it as well, I'm like, wow, it was just the beginning of my journey, you know, and I feel like I've learned so much about it since then. But I think that's kind of the cool thing of life, right? If we're ever looking back and saying, I was perfect then I think we're not really being honest with ourselves because I think we always grow. There's no end to our growth cycle. In entirety of life is growth. And I think that's what's exciting. If we're not looking at things as an opportunity to grow and to learn, then we probably are just bored, you know? And so, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I would love to maybe when I have a little more free time than I have right now, you know, get to explore creation of a piece, you know, whether it's for competitive skating or whatever it might be, you know, creating pieces with folks who are equally excited about grounding their program in character and emotive journey of that character. Cause that's what a program is. You know, we see a person start and we see them develop and we see the bookmark of a chapter. And I think the really special programs, when we think about them, we always think about what comes next, right? When you see, you know, some of the most incredible performances throughout skating history, it's not just the snapshot we see, right? It leaves us finishing the program and saying, wow, I would have loved to have seen 5 more minutes. I want to see what comes after that, because we see this bookmark in their journey and it's their final pose, whatever it might be. And we can't help but think they've created characters so deep that I have to know what comes next, you know? And that's the same thing for all art, for a book, for a movie, you know, whatever it might be. And I think that the greatest skaters, they get that.
Alex, you mentioned that when the show was going from Chicago to Broadway, they took a look at it and they made some changes based on life experience. And that reminds me of how things go with a program throughout the season. You create the program, the skaters have the program at the beginning of the season. It doesn't stay the same the whole season. There are modifications and changes that come to make it stronger or flowing better, or just to make it a better product by the end of the season. Would you say that that's accurate?
Absolutely. You know, and I think that with ice skating in comparison to what we get to do, you know, there are so many similarities and there are also so many things that diversify them, that keep them in their own different worlds. You know, and one of the things, a lot of those changes in ice skating through the course of a year, through the course of a season, come down to points. You know, we're always, it's a sport. It's a competitive sport. And a lot of that comes down to, okay, I missed this level here. How can I shift something so I can achieve that level? Or how can I, you know, maybe add another jump and make it a combo so that I have more points here? Or how do we change our footwork so that I'm hitting my rocker into my counter, you know, bracket sharper? And with what I do now, you know, it's less so definitive in the point structure of that, but the goal is the same in that we're both going for the betterment of a piece, right? And so with our reanalysis in the Broadway run, our goal was taking the history that we have lived and imbuing it into these characters, into these lives, building upon the foundation we've already built. I think that the closest approximation in skating, you know, is kind of that transition between one season and the next, when you have a moment, you know, whether it's after, you know, regionals or sectionals or nationals or worlds, you know, and I always did it. I assume most do. You kind of have a step back, whether it's you're a solo skater and it's yourself, or you're in a partnership and it's you and your partner and your coach or coaches, and you kind of step back and say, okay, where do we go next? You know, it's that metacognition of what's just happened. What have we grown from this year? Because hopefully the programs have not only been an exploration of character, but an exploration of your own range, right? You know, I had seasons where it's like, okay, we've never really done a program that was in this style. Let's play in that and see what we can learn about ourselves as artists on ice. You know, and you learn, okay, you know, we focused in on, you know, let's say a more lyrical style of piece in this. I felt that that really, I resonated with that lyrical style. Is there any way moving forward that we can, you know, take that lyrical style and I can take what I've learned from this program and now enrich this next program, whether it's lyrical or whether it's not, you know? I mean, I think the coolest thing is when you see fusion, right? Personally, I get bored when I see the same program year after year, you know? I get bored if I see, you know, someone who finds their comfort zone, whether it's lyrical or whether it's, you know, whatever it might be, and they sit in it. Because I think that that's the point when we've, like we were talking about, we've stopped asking ourselves, what more can we learn? You know? And that's not to say that you can't continue to learn about yourself in any given style. But I think it's really exciting to see someone say, okay, you know, and I think that's especially in ice dance, kind of the cool thing about having, is it called rhythm dance still? I still refer to it as rhythm dance. Okay. Having a rhythm dance, is that you have this opportunity every year that you don't get to choose exactly what you're doing. You know, someone is telling you, you have to explore this style. What a cool opportunity. What a cool opportunity to learn an entirely new style, whether it's rumba, samba, hip hop, waltz, you know, foxtrot, something that you might not feel comfortable in, and you get to explore it and then take it into the next thing, right? And so if we're doing the same thing year after year, then in essence, yeah, we're developing, but we're developing linearly, right? I love seeing a team take risks. I love seeing a team that says, you know, yes, I'm comfortable in lyrical. Let's play with, you know, a bombastic, explosive march or a tango or something, something weird and abstract, or, you know, something that is out of our comfort zone so we can then learn from that and then take all of the things that we know in lyrical and create a fusion. You know, I would love to see that complete mastery. And I think that, you know, when you think back to the greats, specifically of ice dance, but of all disciplines, you see mastery, you know? I mean, I can't, whenever I think of skating, it's hard for me, and he's my friend, so maybe this is biased, but, you know, I can't help but think about Nathan. I mean, my goodness, he has such an ease and a flow. I would love to see him do Frank Sinatra. At the same time, I would love to see him do a song by, you know, Lil Wayne. You know, like, you could throw anything at him, the entire gamut of music, and I feel that he would just fully commit to it and find something so interesting and unique, because we see his development in all these different genres coming together. And so, yeah, this is a very tangential answer to your question. I apologize. Yes, absolutely. There is similarity between the development of a program throughout a season, as well as that development at the beginning of a season, as you're kind of deciding what you can take from the previous year's growth and put into the coming season.
I feel like what you're saying is, first of all, it's extremely interesting because it's making me think about my life as well. And some aspects of, you know, appreciating yourself, always wanting to learn. So thank you very much for sharing all of that. I was thinking, you know, the parallelism between skating and acting are becoming more and more obvious the more we talk about it. One thing though about the RD that we touched on, maybe, I don't know whether you missed that, but over the last couple of years, it's becoming even more theatrical in a way. So this year the theme is party music from the 50s, 60s and 70s, where the skaters not only have to embrace a different style, but they also have to study what the style was like. So they have to come up with their own costumes. They have to literally dive into the decade or the decades that they choose to skate on and, yeah, interpret it on the ice, you know, even more than what they would do for something that they choose to do, because it's almost like they have an imposed script, as you kind of mentioned. So you cannot really decide otherwise when it comes to the rhythm. So it's very interesting to see the two worlds going in parallel where there are so many things happening that, yeah, I feel like the skater in you benefits the actor and vice versa, the actor would benefit a skater. And that's why I think, you know, future work for you to consider to do some choreography would be really amazing as opposed to help the skaters. Yeah.
And yeah, no, I don't obviously follow it as closely as I did when I was competing myself, but I do, I watch skating. I generally will follow some of the Grand Prix season and I'll catch highlights when I miss it. But you know, I have a lot of friends who are, you know, dear loved ones who I practically lived with, you know, when I was competing, who are still competing. And so I love getting to keep up with them and follow with them. So I do, I've loved getting to see this development into, you know, this current ideology where we are encouraging them to fully embrace an entire, you know, idea behind, I'm going to call it movement versus dance, because, you know, in essence, dance is movement. It all comes down to movement. And, you know, through human history, you know, we're talking, you know, you brought up like 1950s, but it's the entirety of human history has been based on dance, because dance and movement are communication. And ultimately, as people, we strive to communicate. I think it's a fundamental human tenet. I think it's what has allowed us to create societies, you know, I'm looking out my window at New York City right now, and I'm like, this all is here because a long time ago, people from different places came together around a campfire or, you know, whatever it might be, and longed to communicate with each other. And, you know, whether they wanted to trade or they wanted to learn cultures or, you know, whatever it might be, we as people want to come together. And so that excites me, because when you're encouraging people to look into these big periods of dance, we're kind of asking them to be a little more existential. You know, we're asking them to acknowledge not only, you know, okay, well, in this time frame, you know, flexed toes were in because it was, you know, a looser style of dance. We're asking them, why did people come together at this time? You know, because the reason why people came together and danced in the 1950s was very different than the reason that people come together and dance now. You know, I mean, we'll bring up that example. People had just gone through a world war. They had seen one of the darkest periods in history. They needed to come together. They needed to share this love and this movement and music and life with each other, because they had just survived something pretty crazy. You know, I mean, we've talked a lot about it recently with COVID, you know, not to speak its name, but, you know, it was a scary time and we weren't able to be together because we had to be safe. And, you know, a lot of actors were really worried. It was a scary time to be an actor because you kind of see this terrifying thing that has completely stopped your job and had seemingly no end in sight, you know? And I was in grad school when it happened. You know, I had taken a year off of working to go to grad school. And I'm like, oh my goodness, did I just change my whole life and go to grad school for a job that I can't do anymore? And it all worked out great because I had met my wife there. And so that was the real importance of me being there in the universe's journey. But it was scary to think about the possibility that this thing that I had, you know, kind of made this big decision to dedicate my life to, not only had I retired from skating for the purpose of exploring this world and this passion, but now I had put off work. You know, I had contracts that I was supposed to be doing that I said no to because I was going to go to school. And now I'm, you know, not only out that financial help, but now theoretically I might never work again. And luckily I had professors who were older and wiser than myself who had the wisdom to say, no. When we have experienced periods like this throughout history as humans, what does it really cause us to do? We come together. When you experience hardship, you don't separate apart. You might for a short time because you have to or because et cetera. But ultimately, you come together. Because as humans, I think we crave that. I think that we crave connection and community, like I was saying. And that really shifted my perspective on it, because we saw this horrible, horrible thing as it was, but it allowed us to be excited about what was to come. Because I think that in the wake of this, I mean, we just saw the most crowded season in Broadway history. And it's what, a year out, you know, it was a little scary being a part of it, but it was, you know, it's exciting because it's showing that people do care. People still want to come into a theater and share connection as a unit, you know, and in a time of streaming, and I love streaming, you know, hey, if anyone's listening to this who works at Netflix, hit me up. But, you know, it's a time of streaming and a time of personalized connection, because you're still connecting. You are, you know, film acting is still the ability to let someone on a couch feel something, right? But it's different than being in an auditorium in a house of 1,000 people, of 10 people, you know, it doesn't have to be a certain number, and sharing something in a communal space. And it's just been really exciting to see that continue to thrive. But yes, again, I continue to be tangential. It is my consistent factor here. But going back to the initial question, I think it's really cool seeing the way that the rhythm dance structure has continued to grow and develop to encourage people to come together. And as I was saying, hopefully not only acknowledge the physical characteristics of periods of dance, but the emotive and personal reasons why dance evolved in those ways at that time, because that is something incredibly unique and special to periods of times that will never, ever be the same again.
Alex, can you take us back to that night in May when you made your debut on Broadway? What were your feelings before, during, and after?
Oh, so you know what? It's an interesting one. And I'll give this in a little bit of a two-part answer, because in my perspective, I kind of had two first nights on Broadway. I had that first night. Well, okay, I had three. I had the opening of the show. You know, as someone who's been a part of this project for years, you know, it's Ingrid Michaelson's baby, but it's my nephew, if that makes sense. And so it's kind of like you see, you know, this thing that you care so deeply about get to step out, you know, and be, you know, it gets to breathe fully for its first time. You know, it's had little breaths here and there, but its first real big breath. And that was really special back in March. My first day on stage, also as dance captain, technically, that was my debut. My real, you know, personal debut was the one in May, where I went on for Lon, who is the other man, for those of you who don't know the show. For those of you who have seen the movie, James Marsden, thank you very much. And it was an interesting day. You have this buildup, you know, as a kid who grows up acting, you know, even when I was skating, I was doing theater in school. And you always imagine the day that you get to be on a Broadway stage acting in front of people. And it was so interesting because, and I say this is going to sound melancholy and I don't mean it to, but when I got there, I realized it was just another day of me getting to live in the people, you know, and that I think was actually a cool thing. I've trained my whole life for this, whether it was skating or whether it was acting at school or taking classes after school, at the School of Performing Arts in Naperville, you know, all of these different things led me here and I've trained my whole life for it. And, ultimately I think, especially my year that I spent in London training on classical text, Shakespeare, you know, Restoration, Spanish Golden Age, you know, all of those big weighty pieces of text taught me that while the performance is important, the journey as the actor is what's really special about what we get to do. The exploration, the discovery, the questions, and ultimately the moment that you're on stage is it's like competing in skating. You know, 99% of it is training at your rink at 5 a.m. when no one else is there and all of your friends are sleeping because school doesn't start till 8. And 1% is when you're out there in front of an audience, in front of the judges, you know? And so for me, it was kind of just a nice, yeah, there's still a little bit of nerves, sure, you know, but their excitement. A thing that I remember specifically was the moment before I went out on stage, and Andrea Burns in our show, who is a longstanding name on Broadway, you know, someone that I've looked up to for years and years. You know, she was in original cast of In the Heights and a whole bunch of other things. And she came up to me and said, "You did it. You're here and you're a part of this." And it was just an incredibly, not the word that we would use as society is simple, but really it's, I like to say it's distilled. You know, it's an incredibly complex thing that she managed to get through in a couple words. And it really meant a lot. And from that point on, I was long, you know, I lived as long until the end of the show. And, at the end of it, I got to go see my family, you know, my wife and my parents were able to be there, and it was just a really special day to get to share with them. And then my third debut was the one I was very nervous for. And that was when I went on as Middle Noah for the first time. Cause at that point it's like, okay, now I have the weight of being a leading role in the show. And now I sing the high stuff. And now I, you know, I'm going through the emotive journey, and, it is my responsibility to help the people here feel something. And that day I remember I wasn't expecting. I had kind of been told by the guy, you know, I might have a day coming up, you know, like a month out. And then I didn't hear anything. Oh, he must not have done anything. And it was like 11 o'clock that morning, and the show was at like 7. And I got the call from my stage manager, "Hey, you're going on for Middle Noah today." And that was, you know, the, oh, we're starting to go up on the roller coaster. You know, we've just gotten to the lift hill, and the chain started pulling me up this really tall hill, and I can see where I'm going, but I've got 6 hours till I get there. And you know, that run up from 11:30 up until half hour at 6:30 was kind of like, okay, I've been covering this role for 2 years, but suddenly I'm scared I'm going to forget all of it. You know, it's kind of like you get out on the ice and they announce your name. You've done your 5-minute warm up. They announce your name and you're like, wait, what's my starting pose? I completely forget. And yeah, it was, in our little apartment, I kind of just, ran through the show bit by bit, you know, and it's like, I have this, right? Yeah, I have this. And then, yeah, you get on the stage, and it's kind of an interesting role in that, you know, a lot of times we think about roles in theater as kind of you're the whole show. With this show, because it's different parts in their lives, the Middle Noah, we call it like a track. It's the journey of the character is not typical. He's in the opening number. He's got a little break. He has a big song, and then he's off again. And then the entire second act is his journey. And so it's kind of like, you know, let's say you're watching, you know, a car starting from a stoplight, right? And they take off and they get up to like 10 miles an hour, and then they slam on the brakes, and then they wait a couple minutes, and then they accelerate really, really hard, and then they slam on the brakes again. And then they take off and they go to like 100, and then they come to a stop again slowly at the end. You know, it's a little bit of a, you never know what's coming journey. But I've grown to really appreciate it, to really live in kind of the way that that journey is crafted. You know, Becca and Ingrid created this piece that reflects the non-linearity of dementia, you know, of a person's course through their brain changing on them, you know, and it doesn't operate linearly. There are moments of lucidity. There are moments of loss, of confusion, and you never, as a person on the outside, you know, and I have not experienced this incredibly personally. I've experienced it a little bit, but a lot of people in our cast have experienced it very personally with loved ones. And, you know, they all say that this piece is, it's kind of like a beautiful and painful thing where they're transported back to seeing that. But in the end, it's in a very cathartic way that they get to experience Allie's journey through this nonlinear wave of memory and then loss and confusion and then lucidity. And then it comes back. And because of that, as a memory of hers, I have buoyancy, you know, I'm there and then I'm away. And then I have an opportunity to come back. And as a character, you know, Noah wants this buoyancy because he wants her back in his life. And then again, it retracts because of the hardship he goes through. And then she comes back and the entire second act is their return 10 years later. And what all happens in that, you know, I won't fully spoil, but, you know, it's allowed me to really feel in a physical way, the journey of Noah. And so, yeah, that was the most nervous, debut, I guess you could say, is your principal debut on Broadway, as a principal character, I should say. But again, it was a beautiful day. Even though I didn't have a whole lot of heads up, my parents were still able to fly out. Thank you, Dave and Janice. Always supporting. I'm very, very lucky with my family. And, you know, as always, my lovely wife, Jordan, who's, you know, been there supporting me every step of the way, was there, which was incredibly special. My Allie, so...
Alex, I remember your mom posting when she was on the way, like last minute, she said, to New York. And she was so excited, but she was so anxious about making sure she could get there in time. So, yeah.
The whole day became not only, you know, am I going to know my job? It was, is she going to make it? You know, because it was quite literally down to the minute they walked in as they were closing the doors. And that wasn't just like a perfect timing thing. It was like the flight got delayed and then it got delayed a second time. And then they got in a cab at LaGuardia and then they got out of the cab and started running because Times Square was overrun. And that running literally got them in there right on time. If they hadn't gotten out and run, they would have been 10 minutes late, you know, and it would have been over. It was truly, and I've said this before, but my life has been, a beautiful collage of serendipitous moments, you know, right place, right time, universe looking out for you, whatever you want to call it. It has been serendipity. And that was a nice, you know, minor moment of serendipity where, you know, it was important for me for them to get to be there. And, you know, I couldn't have done any of this without them supporting me along the way. You know, parents are so important. Kids, love your parents, please. You know, you only get to have the parents that you have, you know, and okay, you can choose your family. You can. But we also, if you get to have parents who care about you, that's a very special, special thing, you know, and so don't take it for granted.
So will your parents be there for the final show?
So they won't be here for the final show, but they have been out many, many times along the way. They weren't able to make it out this time. My mom is actually currently working on a Theater on Ice performance. They're doing the Nutcracker. And so she unfortunately was not able to make it out for that. But, you know, this is just, again, this closing is the ending of a chapter. It's not an end, you know, and that's kind of the thing is they were like, yeah, should we be there for that? I'm like, you know what? It's okay. you've seen the show, and this show will continue to live, whether it's with me or without me, whatever. This is a beautiful show, and you've gotten to experience it. And this is just another night, you know, and then we just get to celebrate after. We're celebrating this beautiful journey we've had.
So what's next for Alex?
I was going to ask that same question.
Oh, that is a question I would love to have an answer for. It's always up in the air. Currently, I have a contract that starts January 2nd, which I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say yet. It's a piece that scares me. It's something that will be a challenge emotively and in terms of levels to be reached. And that's what excited me about it, is that it's something that I feel I want to challenge myself to explore. You know, same thing as talking about the rhythm dance. You know, it's an exciting thing to be challenged. It's not a chore, because ultimately we care about the art. And so I care about getting to explore these new things that I haven't explored for however long they end up being. There are a couple other things that are kind of up in the air, and holidays are a typically lacking communication point for the business. So I don't know what's happening with those. I have done all I can. There are a couple things that, you know, unlike skating, I guess sort of like skating, because you go through, you know, whether it's regionals into sectionals into nationals, you know, or through your Grand Prix, junior Grand Prix into the Grand Prix final, whatever it might be, there are auditions in this, right? And so there are different rounds. Like you can go through a first round and you can have a brilliant audition, you just weren't right for the role, or, you know, whatever it might be. And there are times when you go and you're right for the role and they bring you back more and more and more, and you end up going in and working with them, you know, 4 or 5 times before you end up booking a role. I mean, there are people who go in 12 times before they book a role. But I just had a thing about a month ago, which I definitely can't name, but I went in 4 or 5 times, and the final time was, I know the finals. So I know that I made it to there, and communication was kind of we'll be talking to you soon. So I don't know if I have more exciting news on the horizon. I might. And if I don't, I don't, you know, I mean, that's kind of the thing of living as an actor, is you never really know what's next. And that's exciting. All that you can really control is that you are bringing yourself and your 100% commitment to each audition. And I certainly feel like I did with that one. And if it happens, that would be thrilling. It's certainly an exciting piece that I think will be very interesting to people. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, at the same time, I filmed 2 auditions last night, and I have another one on Tuesday. You know, it's you're always auditioning. And so, yeah, you know, currently there is certainly something, at the very least one thing on the horizon, perhaps more. But it's a journey, you know, and it comes in waves. You know, no actor, if any actor tells you that they've worked nonstop for X amount of time, they're probably lying. It's a journey of you work a job, and then you lay low and you work on your craft until the next one that matches you comes along. You know, I think that I read something once about the top 1% of film actors. You know, we're talking Robert Downey Jr., you know, Chris Evans, you know, Scarlett Johansson, the huge names in TV film work on average 47 days a year. That's not to say that they're not trying to work more than 47 days a year. That's they're auditioning, you know, top names, sometimes they're offer only, whatever. But every actor in, you know, my sphere of friends on Broadway, and Broadway is this pinnacle of acting, they are auditioning all the time, you know, sometimes 8-9 times a week. And you book like 0.01% of the jobs you audition for. And that's just kind of, you know, that's the fact of life, is that you're always getting to audition. And that's in essence where the fun comes. You know, again, that's that journey we were talking about with skating. In skating, morning practices and, you know, doing off-ice workouts and all that stuff, that's the journey. In acting, the journey is auditioning. You know, that's the 99%. The 5%, 1%, you know, whatever it might be, is the rehearsing show and actually getting to perform. Everything else is, it's the audition. Our job is to audition. I think that Brian D'Arcy James, brilliant, brilliant actor, one of my favorites. He said, my job is not to perform. My job is to audition. It's to receive a piece and in a pretty quick amount of time, be able to assimilate this text and bring a piece of me to it. My artistic flavor, you know, in the same way of skating, you know, you learn your different styles of movement. You learn what you resonate with, and then you bring it to something new, you know, and that's exciting.
Will there be any more WeatherTech commercials in your future?
WeatherTech Alex, here to sell you blank. You know, who knows? I did one with them. I did their Super Bowl commercial this last year, and I was already living out here. And so they had me, you know, we figured something out with studios out here. But I love the folks at WeatherTech. I've had a great time with them. I think we've shot 12 commercials together at this point. You know, go Illinois company. And they've been great to me. They really have. And if they want to, you know, I've kind of not been able to work with them since the show has been, you know, working in earnest, because my schedule's just been so tough. You know, we're working 6 days of the week in the theater. And so it hasn't really worked out this last, you know, probably 10 months. But hey, you know, if they've got some WeatherTech Alex they'd like to shoot, I'd be happy to come out and sell something for them. I would love to. I really would. I've been very fortunate that I've gotten to work with a lot of great companies in my time in Chicago. And so I'd be happy to work with any of them.
Okay, I got to ask, do you miss skating?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I talk to folks in the world of it semi-frequently, and in and out of the world, they ask me that semi-frequently. And yes and no. You know, I will always be thankful for the time that I had skating. I think I learned so much about myself as a person, as a worker, as an athlete, and as an artist because of that. And I do not think that I could be where I am now without it. I really don't. I think that it was crucial to my journey and to that serendipity. You know, I wouldn't have been at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art at the time that I was to meet my wife if not for skating. I wouldn't have had the experiences overseas. I mean, I literally had a voiceover audition like 2 days ago where they wanted me to do a French accent. And they were like, yeah, why do you feel that you'd be a good fit for this? I'm like, well, because I listened to my coach Fabien Borzot talk in a French accent every day for 4 years, you know? And so I'm like, I've got this history with it. That doesn't mean I can do it well, but it does mean that I have a history with it. but you know, it's interesting because both in those, you know, kind of literal senses of being thankful for it, also, you know, it taught me so much. It really did, about myself. Like I was saying, do I miss it? When I watch my friends competing, I do not. I've kind of switched the early morning schedule for the late night schedule. You know, now I get back from, I'm in Times Square at, you know, 11:30 at night, which is rough, but, it's a different type of challenge, you know, the work that I do now, but I feel that, I love skating. I'll always love skating. I do feel that while it was a decision that at the time a lot of people didn't necessarily understand, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense to a lot of folks. Me retiring when I did, it was a decision that I knew I had to make because it's one of those rare moments in life where your heart and your brain operate fully in sync. And when that happens, whoever's listening to this, wherever you are in your life, whatever you are going through, if you feel that your heart and your brain are in sync, trust them, because that is as good as your gut. You know, if your heart and your brain are speaking together, you feel strongly and you should listen to yourself. And you should always trust yourself. And that's what I did. And people told me I was crazy. You know, a lot of people were very displeased. But I knew I had to do it. And ultimately it was the greatest serendipitous decision, because without it, nothing that has happened since could have ever happened, ever. Down to the literal, like, month that it happened, which is a whole tangent I will spare you of. Next time. But I do miss getting to, you know, especially, you know, as I haven't been able, my skates are in the closet, you know, but I've still got them.
Rockefeller Center is not that far away, Alex.
I just haven't gotten to, with the show going on, I haven't gotten to use them as much as I like. But honestly, before, I was on the ice probably every other week or so. You know, I still get to go out there semi-frequently. And I the way I explain it is, as someone who is passionate specifically about the art and the artistry, I've kind of been freed, you know. Not to say that the rules keep you in a cage, but they keep you on a path, you know? And since retiring from the competitive side, I now have all of these different paths that I can go down. You know, I can, if I feel that I want, you know, when I'm skating, that I want a moment in the music to be represented by this move, but I couldn't have done that because it would have been illegal, or it would have been, you know, something that would have stopped me from getting a certain point, or it would have been a deduction, whatever it might be. I can do it now. You know, I can go out and I can just live free and enjoy the thing that we all love about the ice, which is that you can fly, whether it's speed or flow. Oh my goodness. I love the feeling of, you know, coming around the end pattern of, you know, whatever it was, a lap of stroking, a pattern dance, and just doing the fastest progressives you can into a rise up on your right and then dip into the knee and the ankle and drop into the deepest right in forward inside edge that you can, and just literally be at this angle, you know, using nothing but the physics and the gravity to bring you around on a curve, and just enjoy that, you know, and feel like you have this counterbalance of gravity and your leg, your free leg, offsetting this tremendous lean in. Nothing will ever feel like that. That is distinctly unique. And I love it. And I do. And I still love every second that I get to go out and be on the ice, whether it's, you know, working with a team or a skater to help them achieve something greater and more personal and more emotive. Or if it's just me out there enjoying what it is to feel like you can fly for a couple minutes. And I think that's kind of the magic of skating.
Well, Alex, we appreciate so much you coming on and talking to us. This has been so much fun to listen to you share your wisdom from everything that you've learned and how skating is similar in ways.
Oh, the pleasure is mine.
We will have you back on at some point to give us an update, please, on what's going on. And
break a leg in the last few shows here of The Notebook. And if...
Thank you so much.
Hopefully you come around theater in my neck of the woods. I would love to see whatever you're doing.
That's right.
The Notebook comes here. I have season tickets to our Broadway series here where I live. And so if you're... ever in my neck of the woods, I'd love to see you perform. So
absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Week in Skating. Remember, you can keep up with us throughout the week by visiting our website at www.thisweekinskating.com. Connect with us on social media for additional updates. You can find us on Twitter at This Week in Skating without the E's, or Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at This Week in Skating. You got a burning question or feedback for Gina, Daphne, or Mateo? Reach out to us via social media or drop us an email at thisweekinskating@gmail.com. And if you're really enjoying the show and want to support us further, consider joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/thisweekinskating. Until next time, have a nice week.